justice in all the Islamic government, we are going to kill you. You see, that he was killed for this great cause. And he says in his letter to the people of Kufa that my grandfather, Rasul of God, Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, said, anyone who sees a tyrant ruler who actually makes haram of the God halal, actually, or makes the halal of the God haram, or vice versa, and he acts against the sunnah and conduct of the Holy Prophet, and he actually acts upon oppression among the people, and Muslims stand silent in front of him, and they do not criticize him anyway, with their words, with their actions, with their behaviors, and do not blame him for these bad actions of his. It's a duty on Allah. It's something that has a compulsory on Allah that this silent Muslim should be should have the same end that will come to this ruler, that tyrant ruler. He warns them that you are not allowed to be silent. You have to criticize the tyrant ruler who is ruling over the Islamic Ummah. So this is what Imam Hussein alayhi salam says. He says, I'm coming to create justice for you, to bring you justice in case you accept me, in case you answer my invitation, and in case I'm going to be your leader, I will act upon the justice. And that's why he was, again, based on, as I said earlier, he was killed for this very important cause, because they told him, Bughdan la abig, we are killing you because of that harsh justice that your father was going to create among the Islamic Ummah. They were not able to accept what Imam Ali alayhi salam did. Imam Ali salam, actually, his justice actually is quite well known, and I don't know if, in case we want to talk about his justice, it takes long time and it's not that related to the topic, but Ali Sot al-Adalat al-Insaniya by Christian writer, those who are interested to read about the justice of Imam Ali, they can refer to these, they can refer to that book. The same thing is going to happen for the Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. إِذَا قَامَ قَائِمُنَا فَإِنَّهُ يَقْسِمُ بِالسَّوِيَّةِ. That he's going to distribute the Baytul Mal in inequality between the people.
All right.
Yeah.
And so, it said that there will be no rich or poor.
When we see, the reason that he's going to come, based on a hadith, the time that he is going to come is that the earth is full of injustice. So he's going to come, it's famous that he's going to come to fill the earth with justice.
Yeah.
And this is not a concept that exists only in the school of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. All the other religions and denominations are waiting for such a person to come.
Yes.
To fill the earth with justice.
Yeah.
We know that he is coming to have a government in which justice is there.
Yes, yeah. And rightly you mentioned that each and every religion is waiting. I remember living in a non-Muslim society when there were Sikhs, and they would always have this sword, and they would even sleep with that sword. And once it was questioned for us, so I asked them, why do you even sleep with that sword? Like, what's it that you can't just keep it away from yourself at the time of like when you're resting? And the girl replied to me that the earth is filled with injustice in one or the other way, and one of our leaders is going to come and revive the justice, and we are with this sword in the state of alertness. We are ready, because whenever he's going to come, we are his soldiers, and we are having this word all the time with us is a sign of being in a state of alert.
There is a short point again with regard to the social justice that I want to refer to. In a dua, we read that Allahumma tahir bihi baladak hatta tunira bi adlihi dhulma al-jawr. That is, we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that, oh Allah, actually clear your lands with the hands of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. so that his light will spread justice and remove the darkness of the oppression. So this is again what we read in some du'as. And it's beautiful that some actually say, even among the Islamic thinkers, that Imam is not going to have a government, to establish a government. And it was not the case even for Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. Shatter this long night forever. I need a hero to stop this thousand-year-old
based on the situations that Imam had, in case they were actually welcomed by the people and the people were with them, they never stood silent and they actually they were not the people to give negative answer to the people of their time.
Okay.
And Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi says that all of the imams, including Imam Hussein alayhi salam, they were after a government,
yeah,
to establish a government.
Yeah.
And this government requires to have justice. And any government without any justice, without justice, is not a divine or Islamic government.
All right.
So they were after a government. But to the extent that the people welcomed them, that then they were able to create and make such a government.
Yes.
We have seen that Imam alayhi salam, for 25 years, he was at home. People did not come towards him. Actually, people went to another way or lineage.
Yeah.
As soon as they came to him, he wanted to get assured that the people will follow him.
Yeah.
As soon as he got assured, he accepted them. It doesn't mean that he was not the imam at that time. It definitely was the imam. He was the leader of the Islamic Ummah. But people themselves deprived themselves from the existence of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Yes.
See? The same way goes to Imam Hussein. As far as he was in Medina, or from the time that he went to Mecca, so Imam of the time, he cannot pay allegiance to the oppression of the time.
Yes.
So he has to find a way out.
Yes.
When he goes to Mecca, they wanted to kill him in Mecca. What did he do? He wanted the sacredness of the house of God not to be broken.
Yeah.
He left Mecca. He said, in case they are going to kill me, let they kill me out of Mecca.
Somewhere else.
He says that I don't want the other followers of religion say that, okay, they didn't even follow whatever their religion says.
Yeah.
You see? He said, yes, Yazid, after killing me, let he kill me out of this sacred place. And he is not allowed, based on his mission, the mission that he has, he is not allowed to pay allegiance with Yazid.
Yes. And how difficult it is, like everyone wants to die in his own nation, and how difficult it is to, like, it's a big lesson when Imam Hussein alayhi salam is saying that we're doing that and actually practically doing that. It shows that how many sacrifices he's making within.
Again, I told you, in case Imam says that people are welcoming him, he was not that simple minded. He was Imam, he's infallible, he knows everything. He sends Muslim ibn Aqil to Kufa to see if these numbers of letters that come to him are true.
Yeah.
20,000 letters, some say more or less. I don't want to get into the numbers exactly. So Muslims again sends a letter. Yes, all the people are with you. But Muslim sends this letter before he's being martyred, because he didn't know what happens even to himself, because later on they killed Muslim himself, and he saw that the people of Kufa are not the people that can be trusted.
Okay.
That's why when he was, before he was martyred, he said that he was crying. The people said to him, some people said to him, "Why are you crying? Are you afraid of death?" He said, "No, I'm crying for the Imam who is on the way, and I told him, come."
Yeah.
You see? So Imam, as soon as he finds that he has acceptability by the people, he finds it of compulsion on himself to come and help people.
Yeah.
The same goes to Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. As far as we are ready and we are able to accept him to be a real follower and real companion of him, he will come. He's yes. waiting for us. He's not waiting for himself. He's not waiting for anything.
Yeah.
He's only waiting for us to accept him.
Yeah,
our readiness. Are we really having such a readiness?
Readiness
or not?
And inshallah, I pray we be among the people who are ready or who day by day improve themselves to be among the soldiers of Imam. Thank you so much, Dr. Alavi, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. A Saudi student at Leeds University in England who had returned home to the kingdom for a holiday has been sentenced to 34 years in prison for having a Twitter account and for following and retweeting dissidents and activists. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalists Stephanie Kirchgassner and Robin Winter. The piece is titled Saudi Woman Given 34-Year Prison Sentence for Using Twitter. A Saudi student at Leeds University in England who had returned home to the kingdom for a holiday has been sentenced to 34 years in prison for having a Twitter account and for following and retweeting dissidents and activists. The sentencing by Saudi Arabia's Special Terrorist Court was handed down weeks after the US President Joe Biden's visit to Saudi Arabia, which human rights activists had warned could embolden the kingdom to escalate its crackdown on dissidents and other pro-democracy activists. The case also marks the latest example of how the Saudi Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, has targeted Twitter users in his campaign of repression, while simultaneously controlling a major indirect stake in the US social media company through Saudi Arabia's Sovereign Wealth Fund, the Public Investment Fund, PIF. Salma al-Shahab, a 34-year-old, a mother of two young children, was initially sentenced to serve 3 years in prison for the crime of using an internet website to cause public unrest and destabilize civil and national security in Saudi Arabia. But an appeals court on Monday handed down the new sentence, 34 years in prison, followed by a 34-year travel ban after a public prosecutor asked the court to consider other alleged crimes. According to a translation of the court records, which was seen by The Guardian, the new charges include the allegation that Salma al-Shahab was assisting those who seek to cause public unrest and destabilize civil and national security by following their Twitter accounts and by retweeting their tweets. It is believed that Salma al-Shahab may still be able to seek a new appeal in the case. By all accounts, Salma al-Shahab was not a leading or especially vocal Saudi activist, either inside the kingdom or in the United Kingdom. She described herself on Instagram, where she had 159 followers, as a dental hygienist, a medical educator, a PhD student at Leeds University, and lecturer at Princess Noura bint Abdul Rahman University, and as a wife and a mother to her sons Noah and Adam. Her Twitter profile showed she had 2,597 followers. Among tweets about COVID burnout and pictures of her young children, Salma al-Shahab sometimes retweeted tweets by Saudi dissidents living in exile, which called for the release of political prisoners in Saudi Arabia. She seemed to support the case of Lujain al-Hathloul, a prominent Saudi feminist activist who was previously imprisoned, is alleged to have been tortured for supporting driving rights for women in Saudi Arabia and is now living under a travel ban. One person who knew Salma al-Shahab said she could not stomach injustice. She was described as well-educated and an avid reader who had arrived in the United Kingdom in 2018 or 2019, to pursue her PhD at Leeds University. She had returned home to Saudi Arabia in December of 2020 on a holiday and had intended to bring her two young children and husband back to the United Kingdom with her. She was then called in for questioning by Saudi authorities and eventually arrested and tried for her tweets. A person who followed her case said Salma al-Shahab had at times been held in solitary confinement and had sought during her trial to privately tell the judge something about how she had been handled, which she did not want to state in front of her father. She was not permitted to communicate the message to the judge, the person said. The appeal's verdict was signed by three judges, but the signatures were illegible. Twitter, meanwhile, declined to comment on the case and did not respond to specific questions about what, if any, influence Saudi Arabia has over the company. Twitter previously did not respond to questions by The Guardian about why a senior aide to Prince Mohammed bin Salman, Badr al-Assakr, has been allowed to keep a verified Twitter account with more than 2 million followers, despite US government allegations that he orchestrated an illegal infiltration of the company, which led anonymous Twitter users to be identified and jailed by the Saudi government. One former Twitter employee has been convicted by a US court of law in connection to the case. One of Twitter's biggest investors is the Saudi billionaire Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal, who owns more than 5% of Twitter through his investment company, Kingdom Holdings. While Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal still serves as chairman of the company, his control over the group faced questions in the United States media, including the Wall Street Journal, after it emerged that the Saudi royal, a cousin of the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, had been held captive at the Ritz-Carlton in Riyadh for 83 days. The incident was part of a broader purge led by Prince Mohammed bin Salman against other members of the Saudi royal family and top businessmen, and involved allegations of torture, coercion, and expropriation of billions in assets into Saudi coffers. In a 2018 Bloomberg interview, Prince Al-Walid bin Talal, which was conducted in Riyadh 7 weeks after his release, the billionaire acknowledged he had reached a confirmed understanding with the Saudi government, apparently in connection to his release, which was confidential. More recently, Kingdom Holding announced in May that it had sold about 17% of its company to the PIF, the Public Investment Fund, where Prince Mohammed bin Salman serves as the chairman, for $1.5 billion. That, in turn, makes the Saudi government a significant indirect investor in Twitter. According to Twitter, investors do not play a role in managing the company's day-to-day business. The European Saudi Organization for Human Rights condemned Salma al-Shahab's sentence, which it said was the longest prison sentence to ever be brought against any activist in Saudi Arabia. It noted that many female activists have been subjected to unfair trials that have led to arbitrary sentences and have been subjected to severe torture, including sexual harassment in Saudi Arabia. Khalid al-Jabri, a Saudi who is living in exile and whose sister and brother are being held in the kingdom, said the Salma al-Shahab case proved Saudi Arabia's view that dissent equates to terrorism. Salma's draconian sentencing in a terrorism court over peaceful tweets is the latest manifestation of Mohammed bin Salman's ruthless repression machine, he said, referring to the Saudi crown prince. Just like journalist Jamal Khashoggi's assassination, her sentencing is intended to send shockwaves inside and outside of the kingdom. Dare to criticize Mohammed bin Salman and you will end up dismembered or in a Saudi prison. While the case has not received widespread attention, the Washington Post on Tuesday published a scathing editorial about Saudi Arabia's treatment of the Leeds University student and said her case showed that commitments the president had received on reform were a farce. At the very least, President Biden must now speak out forcefully and demand that Salma al-Shahab be released and allowed to return to her sons, both a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, in the United Kingdom, and to resume her studies at Leeds University.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, Imam al-Husseini's firmness on the path of truth. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And in today's lesson, we're talking about the firmness on the path of truth that Al-Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam took during his time, during his period of leadership. Steadfastness on the path of truth was one of the most prominent qualities of the father of the martyrs, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, because for the establishment of truth and for the destruction of the facts of falsehood and centers of oppression, Imam Hussein exhibited an unequaled perseverance. He was so persevering. The Holy Imam had in his view truth with all its vastness and meanings, and he set out for the field of contest so that truth may be established in all Islamic lands and the people may be released from atrocities meted out to them by tyrannical rulers of the time and dispel forces. So Imam Hussein was so firm at the time that he had besieged him. He had besieged him at events that had subjected people to deep pits of ignorance, where they were thrashing their limbs for survival. Imam alayhi salam saw that the community was sinking in falsehood and deviations, and people were not having any values in their life. Therefore, he proceeded towards the field of confrontation so that he may sacrifice everything for the sake of hoisting the flag of truth. The Imam alayhi salam has mentioned this same illuminated aim in his address to his companions. This was the type of firmness Al-Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam used to have during the time of his rulership, during the time of his leadership.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu ala Ya Aba Abdullah
wa ala arwahi.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and we are talking in this very particular moment about the firmness on the path of the truth. The firmness that Imam Hussein alayhi salam had on the path of truth. He stood with truth whenever it came, like his father did, like his grandfather, Prophet Muhammad, did. He said every time he felt that this is the path of truth, he went through the same path, and he never chose any other path other than that. Imam Hussein is reported to be having these particular firmness on the path of truth, that he is reported to be saying, or he once said to his companions, "Oh my companions, do you not see that truth is not being practiced and falsehood is not being avoided, so that a believer may be eager to meet the Lord?" Truth was one of the most prominent qualities of the personality of the father of martyrs, Al-Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. It was one of his main prominent qualities that he had inherited them. He had inherited those qualities from his grandfather. And that is the reason why he used to, you know, time and again kiss that same face and the same mouth that spoke up the words of Allah and issued the springs of justice and truth on the earth. This is a quality that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam can be easily say that he inherited it from his grandfather, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and from his father, Al-Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. It's a trait that every leader in our time should try and have, to be firm on the path of truth. It's the path that whenever any leader follows it, definitely he's going to be a successful leader, and the people under him are going to gain a lot and to live a life that is supposed to be lived according to the teachings of the Prophet and the teachings of the Book of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, inshallah. Until next episode, I will meet you, inshallah. I've been your host, Hussein Hinzano. Until next time, fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence, feel the air.
in the limelight.
Transferring critically endangered species within Europe to broaden the gene pool is more difficult with Britain outside of the European Union. According to the British and Irish Association of Zoos and Aquariums, before 31st of December 2020, an average year saw about 1,400 transfers between the United Kingdom and other European Union countries. But in 2021, there were just 56, and so far this year, there have been 84. We're prepared for you an article written by James Tapper. The piece is titled Brexit Threatening Endangered Species as Red Tape Hits Zoo Breeding Programs. Breeding programs designed to save critically endangered species are being jeopardized by Brexit, with zoos warning they are being prevented from transferring animals such as rhinoceroses and giraffes by red tape created by the UK's departure from the European Union. The Animal Health Regulation was passed in 2016, before the EU referendum, but came into force in April of 2021. British officials claim there have been no reports that the United Kingdom dissented from the regulation. Zoos' small populations mean it is essential that they swap animals for breeding programs to keep the gene pool as broad as possible. According to the British and Irish Association of Zoos and Aquariums, before 31st of December 2020, an average year saw about 1,400 transfers between the United Kingdom and other European Union countries. But in 2021, there were just 56 transfers, and so far this year, there have been 84 transfers. Nikki Needham, the British and Irish Association of Zoos Senior Manager for Animal Care and Conservation, said there were more than 400 European Endangered Species Programme, or EEPs, and British zoos and aquariums were involved in coordinating about 25% of these. She said, "These are safety net populations for threatened species," adding, "Animal transfers between zoos and aquariums are carefully planned to maintain a healthy genetic population." One program to save the eastern black rhinoceroses, a critically endangered species, has 87 animals, of which about 39 are at British zoos. Nikki Needham said, "Losing this would jeopardise the viability of the population and stop reintroductions to East Africa." Nikki Needham, the British and Irish Association of Zoos and Aquariums Senior Manager for Animal Care and Conservation, said transfers have plunged for two main reasons. Since Brexit, a new European Union animal health regulation has come into force after being agreed in 2016. That created new controls on the import of animals and plants into the European Union, known as sanitary and phytosanitary checks. Many of those checks need to be carried out at border control posts, which are usually set up by private enterprises. A few exist at airports in the European Union, but so far there are none at French ports, creating an effective ban on the import of any large animal. Recently, the Observer revealed that farmers were considering taking the extraordinary step of building a border control post in Calais and paying for it themselves so that breeders could export their pedigree cattle and sheep. The few animals that have been transferred successfully to European zoos have travelled in aeroplanes. One was Sammy, a Margay or tiger cat born at Sheldon Wildlife Trust in Devon in late 2020. Margays are native to Central and South America, but illegal hunting means they are now classified as threatened by International Union for Conservation of Nature. There are 45 in Europe, with only 6 breeding pairs, so after the age of 10 months, when margays leave their mothers, Sammy was scheduled to go to Berlin Zoo in Germany to pair with a female margay from France. Zach Showell, Sheldon Wildlife Trust's chief executive, said, "Prior to Brexit, this would not have been a problem. It would have taken a month or two to organise for the animal to get collected by a specialist transport company. This took 6 months." Zach Showell said, "When we're dealing with small populations, being able to move animals to set up new breeding pairs is incredibly important. Certain animals, like the black rhinoceros, if you don't breed them then, they stop cycling. Having individuals on their own or not in breeding situations hampers the ability to continue breeding these endangered species. Some zoos have not been so lucky, with transfers falling through or facing very long delays. Ramon de Orangutan arrived in Munster Zoo in June of 2022 from Blackpool Zoo after a year of planning. His departure means Blackpool's zookeepers can import another male to join the group and hope for more baby orangutans. Zach Showell had to apply for separate animal health certificates for Sammy de Margay. He said, "Every time an animal is moved, the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, or DEFRA, has to negotiate with the other country on what level of health screening and surveillance and everything else needs to be done for this animal to move." Zach Scholl said some countries want new certificates for each species, adding, "I've just been told I need to move some tamarins, New World monkeys, to Belgium. The health certificate for primates from the UK to Belgium does not exist. It's made the whole process incredibly complicated and so much more time-intensive. Costs have also increased because specialist transport companies are not able to drive their vehicles in Europe without approval." Zach Scholl said, "We're moving more animals via airplanes, which is more expensive, and we're talking small animals here. You can't fit a giraffe onto a plane." A DEFRA spokesperson said, "This shows the real harm the bureaucratic approach the European Union has chosen to take on animal and plant health," claiming, "We're ready to continue to negotiate on this, where sensible, pragmatic compromises can lead to improvements for everyone." The spokesperson for the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs noted, "Meanwhile, we are working closely with the Animal and Plant Health Agency and the British and Irish Association of Zoos and Aquariums to identify priority exports where there are welfare concerns or implications to breeding programs," claiming, "All of the requests for health certificates for the exports of zoo animals have been successfully fast-tracked.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of the speech delivered on January 23, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the eulogists of the household of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa ali on the occasion of the anniversary of the birth of Lady Fatima al-Zahra salamullah alayha.
During the time of the revolution, the Hay'ats were very effective. They distributed astonishing elegies in the form of cassettes throughout the country. For example, an elegist would read an elegy in Jahrom or in Yazd, and it would become very popular. It would be an elegy about Imam Hussein, but would contain revolutionary concepts and points about Imam as well. These things would stir the people and move the revolution forward. They gave fresh impetus to the revolution. It was the Hay'ats that were doing this. And this took place during the time of the revolution. During the imposed war as well, many of you remember what the Hay'ats used to do. Whenever the bodies of the martyrs were found, or whenever the youth wanted to move towards the front lines, the main leaders were the Hay'ats for Imam Hussein. Today as well, the Hay'ats thankfully exist in the country in large numbers. These statements were about the Hay'ats.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
There is an important point about Hay'ats. As I mentioned, those two narrations where Imam Sadiq says, keep our issue alive. This means keep our school of thought alive. Well, when the Imam says keep our issue alive, perhaps this is not very understandable to you who live in a Shia environment, in the Islamic Republic and in an Islamic Shia country. At the time when Imam Sadiq said, keep our issue alive, keeping the path of the Ahlul Bayt alive was one of the most difficult, most dangerous tasks. It was a great struggle on the path of Allah. I explained these hardships 40 or 50 years ago when we were discussing such issues at great length. Apparently, those speeches have been published and are accessible. The endeavors of the Imams and that of their companions was very dangerous. Why were all the Imams martyred? Why was Imam Jawad martyred at the age of 25 and Imam Askari at the age of 28? Why did they assassinate them? Why was Imam Musa Kadhim thrown in prison for several years and martyred there? It was because their lives were all about fighting. It was in such circumstances that Imam Sadiq said, keep our issue alive. Imam actually said, you who gather together in Hay'ats should keep our issue alive. In other words, Imam Sadiq demanded the greatest, most dangerous fighting from them.
I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The sizzling temperatures have cooled off in the UK, but the inflation rate is only heating up. Prices are going up everywhere, as inflation, this time driven by food price hikes, jumps to its highest level since 1982, coming in at more than 10%. Millions of families across Britain are now trying to make their money stretch, but it's getting harder by the day.
My weekly, my monthly, everything's shop is increasing. I'm shopping right now whilst I'm at work to just save time. Because not only is your time money, but we don't really have much of that thing called money.
I am having to budget myself, limit myself, to try and ensure that my wage lasts the whole month, considering I'm having to pay for petrol, bills, rent. It does all add up.
It's harder for me to afford things because, you know, I don't have the steady income like most people do in London.
Economists say the UK is facing a perfect inflation storm caused by a number of factors. Brexit and the delays and disruptions it has caused to the supply chain, the pandemic, and the ongoing Western-backed war in Ukraine.
The UK economy reopened suddenly after COVID, creating bottlenecks at ports compounded by post-Brexit red tape, followed by astronomical energy prices resulting from a decision to wean the UK from Russian energy. Inside the UK, that has translated into higher transport and packaging costs, soaring energy and food prices. That means bills getting more and more expensive in supermarkets, restaurants, and gas stations, feeding the demand for higher pay, which adds further to business costs, which turns into even higher prices. And it is that demand for wage increases that's seen multiple public sector strikes in recent weeks. It's a worsening mess that some economists say is in large part the UK government's own doing.
The answer is the war in Ukraine. And you will say, well, is the war in Ukraine going to come to an end? And the answer is no, not if the UK government can help it. You see, Western foreign policy is involved in another debacle.
All this at a time when the UK awaits a new prime minister. Whoever they may be, they have their job cut out for them. Saeed Puraza, London.
A year ago, the United States marked a chaotic end to 20 years of war in Afghanistan, following a hurried pullout of troops that saw the Taliban reclaiming power in the country. Here in Tehran, Iranian officials and political analysts sat together to discuss different aspects of the incident. They regard Washington's exit as an escape from the Afghan quagmire after it failed to achieve its geostrategic objectives there.
Today, the significance of Afghanistan has not diminished in the eyes of the Americans. They didn't leave the country to let China, Russia, and Iran invest in it. The U.S. had to leave because it totally failed there. But it will continue to make the best of its efforts to destabilize Afghanistan.
Last year, in late August, the U.S. evacuated thousands of troops from Afghanistan in just a few days, following President Joe Biden's order to exit fully by August 30, 2021. The withdrawal marked the end of two decades of war in Afghanistan, which sought to bring peace to the country, but left a trail of chaos and mayhem.
The United States not only did not fight terrorism during its 2 decades of presence in Afghanistan, but had a role in many acts of terrorism to legitimize and prolong its presence there.
1 year after the U.S. pullout, Afghanistan is still bogged down in turmoil. The country has been the scene of recurrent terrorist attacks, some of which have been claimed by the Daesh terrorist group. Iran says the U.S. has resorted to Daesh to wage a proxy war in Afghanistan to make up for its losses.
The U.S. continues to back terrorists such as Daesh to destabilize Afghanistan. Aside from Daesh, it has been hosting some 7,000 Afghan military forces from the previous Afghan army to train them. What's the goal of such military trainings?
Since the Taliban takeover, Iran has been calling for an all-inclusive government in Afghanistan as the ultimate way out of the persisting instability in the war-torn country.
Experts here describe the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan a lasting shame for America and the worst fiasco after its loss in the 1950s Vietnam War. They say the chaotic exit is also a lesson for the region that wherever Washington has set foot, it has left nothing but mess and destruction for the hosting nations. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Diplomats from the European Union, including heads of European diplomatic missions in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds, arrived in Gaza Tuesday morning. The senior European officials toured the Shati refugee camp upon arriving in the blockaded territory. Their short visit comes less than 2 weeks after the Israeli regime launched a 3-day military aggression on Gaza that claimed the lives of 49 people, including 17 children.
We come here only 10 days after the ceasefire has been agreed. A ceasefire which gave end to 3 days of terrible fighting, where far too many civilians, far too many children and women lost their lives. It's also to show solidarity to the Gazans in general, but also to the kids, the children who lost their lives, who were injured.
The ambassadors of the European Union made an inspection tour of the wounded during the recent Israeli aggression at Gaza's Shifa Hospital.
We briefed the European delegation on the humanitarian situation in Gaza and the dire condition of hospitals. The delegation also visited the patients and those who were injured during the recent Israeli military aggression. We also told them about the lack of medicines and hospital supplies because of the Israeli blockade.
The brief visit by the European diplomats comes at a time when the people of Gaza are suffering under a tight Israeli blockade that has been in place since 2007. Most Gazans rely on handouts to survive, and many of them are unemployed.
It's clear that many more people fell below the poverty line. Unemployment rate has significantly increased. Health and education problems have become even more problematic.
Palestinians and human rights groups have repeatedly slammed the European countries for their failure to take an action aimed at ending Israeli violations against the besieged territory.
Many here believe that the visit by the European diplomats will not improve the situation for the people of Gaza, given Israel's impunity and the failure of the international community to hold the regime accountable for its crimes. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Mid-August this year marked the one-year anniversary of the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan and the U.S. massive withdrawal from the country, after 2 decades of military presence. The last year U.S.-led evacuation turned violent and tragic, during which many Afghan people lost their lives. Sports champion Muhammad John, who was shot dead at the Kabul airport, was one of the victims. His parents blamed the U.S. for the tragic incident and are seeking compensation for the loss of their boy.
The U.S. and its allies are 100% to blame for the martyrdom of our beloved ones at the airport because they invited people and gave them hope of getting them out of Afghanistan. The U.S. not only did not provide the people with security, but also opened fire on them. They killed and injured at least 400 people, including my son. We are waiting for compensation from those who committed the crime.
The U.S. 2-decade invasion of Afghanistan ended with the withdrawal of the last U.S. troops from Kabul last year. However, Afghans say Washington has started another war against them, a dangerous economic war. Since the Taliban's return to power on August 15, 2021, the U.S. has frozen nearly $9 billion in Afghanistan foreign reserves and cut off major international funding. The sanctions have pushed Afghanistan's economy to the brink of collapse, with 97% of Afghans living in poverty. Afghan people and international bodies have been calling for the release of funds so that the country could cope with the ongoing humanitarian crisis.
The impacts of the U.S. seizure of Afghan assets have not been less than the damages of their 20-year war. When the U.S. sanctions were imposed on Afghanistan, the fragile economy started to shrink. Banking system crashed and people went out of cash. The money they had on their hands lost its value. Today, 1 year on, the conditions are deepening, so the U.S. and the international communities are obliged to unfreeze the assets and let the flow of aid to the country.
Meanwhile, violence and bloodshed have continued under the Taliban. The country saw a rise in deadly attacks against the Shia community last year, mostly carried out by the Daesh terrorist group. 1 year into the Taliban's return to power, Afghans are still grappling with multiple crises. However, they are happy that the U.S. occupation of their country has ended. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The last French soldiers have left Mali after being expelled by Bamako following 9 years of unpopular war, which has left Mali one of the poorest countries in the world. 2.5 million refugees have been created, thousands of civilians were killed, and the politicians who initially colluded with Paris, widely accused of corruption, were ousted by popular anti-French protests in 2020.
Malians have been dying for 9 years. Things have only gotten worse. It has spread to Niger, Burkina Faso, Mauritania, and elsewhere. After 9 years, this hasn't worked, and Malians want results. However, when Malians made their revolution, France criticized and opposed it.
The roots of the Mali conflict run deep, but they all feature French aggression. In 2011, Nicolas Sarkozy illegally dropped 40 tons of arms to help overthrow the Socialist People's Libyan Arab Republic led by Muammar Gaddafi. Those arms spread to northern Mali, where the nomadic Tuaregs used them in their conflict with southern Mali, which has existed ever since imperialist France drew Mali's irregular bowtie-shaped borders. Paris alleged the Tuaregs were religious radicals, and in 2013, François Hollande invaded Mali prior to receiving the approval of the United Nations. Many allege that uranium deposits, which keep French nuclear power cheap, gold mines, and the desire to maintain the neo-colonial system known as Françafrique were the primary motivations for a war which would be dubbed France's Afghanistan.
Many of France's former colonies gained their independence in the 1950s, but since 1960, France has had more than 50 military interventions in Africa.
France has been completely wrong about so many things, and especially the times we now live in. This is a multipolar world, and neocolonialism has failed. Africa no longer wants France and the West as their only ally and as their tutors. Africa has changed, and we will choose our own partners and our own destiny.
The war killed 59 French soldiers, but French imperialism in Mali was cited repeatedly as justification in terror attacks in France, which cost hundreds of lives. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Kashmir is decorated with Indian flags as India is marking its 75th Independence Day anniversary. Government offices, schools, colleges, official vehicles, roads and streets in and around Kashmir were decorated with the Indian flag.